evening. So, I'm going to tell you right now, this is a class tonight where we will be bringing up politics, the Democrat Party, people in the Democrat Party, even the Republican Party or Republicans, and I want you guys to know this. If you are offended by that such talk, this is not your class. This is not the class you need to be in. I'm just going to let you know that now. I have told our members here before, years ago, I used to be a registered Republican. And I'm not saying it's wrong to be registered Republican or Democrat, by the way. I don't think that. But I decided a long time ago, I had a hard time personally. Now, this is Dale speaking. I had a hard time personally not being biased towards whatever party I pledged to. And I had this notion at times that I was defending the party, and sometimes when they were wrong, and I felt, for Dale personally, the best thing that I could do is register it as an independent and for the rest of my life call myself an independent. And when I see corruption and sin in whatever political party in our country, we call it like it is. Now, if you could be a registered Republican and Democrat and do that, that's what I want you to do. We are Christians first, and we are Americans second, and we must remember that. And that's something that must be kept in mind. So, everybody's good with that? Nobody's going to storm out of here mad? Unless you're a communist, you're probably not going to get too mad about this stuff, okay? All right, I promise you that. Well, what exactly is a worldview? Just kind of a review, okay? A worldview is the idea of someone's belief systems in which they interpret the world. When we had 9/11 occur, when that day, when you remember, you and I were angry and sad and scared. There were other people across the globe who were happy, excited, and celebrating that. Why is that? Because their belief system of Islam and what they believe in particular about the Quran or what they believe the Quran teaches is, you know, interpreted that event of this is a good thing. America has been hurt, basically. And Islam is not the only worldview. In fact, if you notice, I'm going to pull up this chart each week. When I look at worldviews, it all starts with God. Remember that? And we talked about, for instance, last week we talked about Islam and their belief of God and everything. Next week we will talk about the New Age, Eastern religion, cosmic humanism, postmodernism, Wiccans. You know, we'll talk about some of that stuff. But tonight, we're going to go on this side. Tonight, when we think of worldviews, we're going to talk about the worldview of atheism and how it has led in the 20th century to another worldview under atheism called communism. Communism. Well, here's the thing about atheism. When you think about life, there are the three big questions that philosophers and preachers and everyone really has to ask. Because you yourself are a philosopher for yourself. How did I get here? Why am I here? And where am I going? Are the three big questions about life. And when you think about those three big questions, the Bible seeks to answer those things. How did I get here? I was created by God. I see that in the book of Genesis. Why am I here? I also see in the book of Genesis, I was here to serve God and have a relationship with God and glorify God. That is my ultimate purpose. Where am I going when this life is over? I'm going to be with God. But if you don't believe in God, how did I get here is nothing more than an accident. I never was planned to be here. It was just by sheer mathematical impossibilities that I'm basically here. One of the things I've often heard about, you know, atheists when they, you know, ascribe to evolution is the Big Bang, you know. And the Big Bang is how everything is explained. But, you know, the initial components to cause a Big Bang, which I don't believe in, where did those first things come from? One of the things about atheism is I don't know how in some ways you could be an atheist when you realize There has to be a God in order to explain what is here, what is temporal, and what is here now. You know, when Genesis 1:1 says, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, you know, God is a being outside of space, time, and matter. And the only way we can explain the origin of space, time, and matter is something outside of it. Some being that has always existed, some being that is immaterial, some being that is spiritual. I don't know how you can get around that. God is. God exists. But according to the atheist, there is no God. So when you think of the view of an atheist, you think of the origin of life. Life is an accident, you know. We've never, ever been able to demonstrate spontaneous generation, but in order to have the idea that God does not exist, you have to have spontaneous generation, that something all of a sudden just arose out of nothing. Never been demonstrated, never been proven, and might I say it never will be. The second thing about atheism is when you think of the idea of starting with the framework that God does not exist, you also talk about, well, what's your moral standards? What's your moral standards? There are times when I was growing up, I would go to the local city park in Columbus, various city parks, and play a game of basketball. And one of the rough things about playing basketball is if there is no referee, who sets the rules? And sometimes people will play city pickup ball according to the idea of, I make my own rules for my own advantage. You understand that? And it's not like that in organized basketball, right? In high school basketball, what do you have? You have referees that enforce the rules, right? And there is a rule book that referees subscribe to, and it's according to that standard that you play the game of basketball, all right? Imagine trying to play the game of football when there were no rules or there were no regulations. Well, where's out of bounds? Or wherever I want it to be. Where's the touchdown? Where's the end zone? Wherever I want it to be. You know? What's a face mask? What's a foul? I didn't do it. You understand that? You know? And the point is you understand without rules and regulations, there is chaos, right? Especially if the refs don't enforce it, you know. I won't go there, never mind. But think about that in regard to life. If there is no God, on what basis is murder wrong and lying wrong and stealing wrong? Because here's what you're going to find. You're going to find if people really believe God doesn't exist, in spite of the inner conscience that God is and that there is this oughtness that we have, people will still come to the conclusion of, why is lying wrong? If it benefits me in the moment, why is it wrong? Why is stealing wrong? In some situations, after all, maybe it's okay. And everyone becomes a law to themselves in the sense of, I am my own standard. And in reality, it's very, very chaotic. The other thing is I got to move on, is when you think about atheism, there is ultimately no value of human life. If God does not exist and I am the product of an accident, then what is the difference between me and a chicken, right? We eat eggs for breakfast. We go to KFC, even though that's probably not real chickens, I guess, but, you know, for lunch sometimes. What is the difference between me and an animal? And if I'm no different than an animal, why don't I live like an animal? Now, we know as Christians, we're made in the image of God, and being made in the image of God, we have a value ultimately to us. I'll tell you something that maybe you didn't know about. You guys, one of the things we have learned about, and I remember learning about it in school, we talk about it in the media, is the atrocities of Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. And the idea of killing millions of Jews and everything. Do you want to know where really Adolf Hitler got his ideas? Charles Darwin. We often talk about, for instance, Charles Darwin, the guy that wrote the book The Origin of the Species. But the truth is when you look at Charles Darwin, he wrote another book called The Descent of Man. And the descent of man was more the implications of Darwinism. And the whole thing of Darwin was, okay, if we're nothing more than a bunch of animals, I want you to think about this. Think about, for instance, dog breeding, okay? Let's talk about horse breeding. I remember when I lived in Kentucky, owning horses was a big deal. And one of the things I found is that's a very lucrative business in horse breeding. So guess what? If you've got a horse that is fast and has good genetics, people will pay you money to breed that horse or buy that horse. Why? Because in horse racing, what do you want? You want the fastest horse, right? And one of the ways you get the fastest horse is not just a good horse trainer, but a good breeder. You get that? All right? So we breed horses to make them faster and faster and faster. We breed dogs. You know, if you have an allergy towards a dog, there are dogs today that do not shed hair. What are they called? Labradoodles? You know, you can have a dog if you kind of have some kind of pet dander allergy possibly because of that. And so what do? You make the animals better by breeding. Now, if we're nothing more than a bunch of humans, let's think about that. All right, if we're the product of survival of the fittest and all of that, how do you make the human race better? By breeding or selective breeding. And that is what we call eugenics, by the way. We used to think in the 1920s that we could eliminate a lot of problems in our world today in the United States by selective breeding, or, let's get a little closer, sterilizing those who we saw unfit to breed. And that's what Hitler did. Hitler's ideas came from Charles Darwin. And I want to tell you something, too, and some of this, I'm getting off topic, but do you realize in our country, from the 1920s to the 1970s, you can look this up, we don't talk about it, we as a country, not you, but as a country, we involuntarily sterilized and practiced eugenics on thousands of people. Did you know that? Look it up. Someone comes into the hospital for some reason, they don't have their life together, their act together, and they would be, all of a sudden, would get a hysterectomy or somehow they would become sterilized. And that was the government's doing. The only state I know right now trying to make amends to that is the state of North Carolina. But look this stuff up. By the way, I've got a lot of stuff I'm going to tell you tonight that may shock you, and just go research it yourself, because This whole series of classes, worldviews, I'm not an expert in this stuff, but it's been an interest of mine for years. Tonight's class has been a big interest of mine for years, which is why I'll probably never cover half of the material. And it's something that I have researched, and maybe you could call it conspiracy theories. I don't care what you call it. It's surprising. That's one of them. That's actually one of them. Well, notice the next thing. Notice there is no significant meaning or purpose in life, and there is no life to come. Listen, if God does not exist, what is the real purpose to life? We're no different than when what is taught in 1 Corinthians 15, let us eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. If God does not exist and there is no life beyond this one, then the real meaning to this life is to live it up. Do whatever makes us feel good. Do whatever gives us power. Do whatever gives us wealth. Do whatever makes us, whether it be drunkenness, whether it be sexual immorality, do whatever. That becomes the purpose to life. And I remember Robbie Zacharias once said this. He said, the worst kind of meaninglessness does not come from being weary of pain or poverty, but he says, being weary of pleasure amid plenty. He said, modern writer Jack Higgins was asked at the pinnacle of his success what he now knows that he wished he had known when he was a younger man. And here's what Jack Higgins said. He said, I wish I had known that when you get to the top, there's nothing there. G.K. Chesterton once said, in regard to atheism and the implications of atheism that we have just, I think, very quickly rushed through. He said, the tragedy of disbelieving in God is not that a person ends up believing in nothing. He says it's much worse. He may end up believing in anything. You see, When you think about the belief of atheism and the worldview that God does not exist, you begin looking, I got to find a purpose for me. And my purpose is to make the world better with good intentions. And one of the ideas of making the world better with good intentions is the concept of communism. How do we make the world a better place? We create a revolution. We create a revolution and change the form of government to make the world a better place. And one of the ways that our college-age students gravitate towards this, our youth today are going towards this, it's this right here. I think this is our biggest threat, in my opinion, to our country. This one here. Okay? So let's talk about communism. What exactly is communism? Well, we oftentimes talk about a guy named Karl Marx. Okay? Karl Marx. Here's the thing about Karl Marx. Karl Marx was not the inventor of communism, actually. He was not the inventor of it. Communism at the very base means communal living. I have a book in my library. I'm going to share with you several books. And this book was written in 1875. This was before the Russian Revolution in the early 1900s. The book is written by a guy who is pro-communist named Charles Nordhoff. But the book is called The Communist Societies of the United States. And it was about 4 or 5 months ago I got this book, and I've read most of it. And what the book is about is this guy in the mid to late 1800s travels in the United States, and he finds groups of people who have what we call communal living. Now, what is communal living? Well, even in the United States, it was not invented here. You remember, and you don't hear about them in the Bible, but the Jews in the first century had at least three different Jewish different groups. There were the Pharisees and the Sadducees, but what you don't read of in the Bible, does anybody know the third group? The Essenes. And you guys, some of you preachers, correct me if I'm wrong. The Essenes were a group of Jews who lived near the Dead Sea and practiced what we called communist communal living. And what they essentially did in their communal living was that, there was no private property. Everyone owned everyone else's things. Everything was shared, and that's how, in one sense, you did that. No one possesses a house absolutely his own. Your house is my house, and so on and so forth. It's the communities. It's the, getting rid of private property. Well, what's interesting here is, have you guys ever studied church history or what we call restoration history? There were several groups who practiced this kind of communal living. Let me give you an example. For instance, there was the Harmonists who lived near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. There was the Separatists who lived near, I don't know how you would pronounce it, Zoar, Ohio. There were the Shakers. The Shakers had colonies all throughout the United States. Where I lived in Kentucky, 15 minutes from where I lived in Kentucky, was the remnants of a Shakers group. And here's what I found with these communal societies. They were all religious groups. Okay, and they all had a lot of things in common. For instance, celibacy was what was in common, which is why they're no longer existing. the Separatists in Zoar, Ohio, believed you could have kids, but the only time you could basically sleep with your wife was to have kids, basically. And once you had your kids, for instance, by the age of 3, you turned them over to the community. The state, in other words, raised your kids there. But they were all very religious. They were very cultic. For instance, the Shakers believed their leader was a lady they called Mother Ann, and they believed she literally was Christ incarnate, basically. And they all were very mystic. They were very spiritualistic in the idea of, the spirits still speak to them. They all have these things in common. A lot of them believe the second coming of Christ was soon to come and everything. But here's my point about all these groups and about this book. One, none of them exist today. Two, it wasn't real communism as we see communism today, and here's why. Number one, they often sold their farms and the production from their farms to outsiders. You know, real communism is self-sufficient. Number two, people who came, the possessions they were to give to the community, money, land, whatever, had been acquired in a free market. Now think about that. And that's how really they got their wealth. And they often brought things from the outside of their community. There were times where they sold things to the outsiders and bought things from the outsiders. And the big difference, I think, between these little communities and communist countries is if you didn't like the community anymore and you no longer wanted to live a celibate life, you could just leave the plantation, if you allow me to say, and go be a citizen in society. Whereas if you are in a communist country, and when things go south and things go, the bread lines, you know, are run dry, how do you leave? How do you get out of the country? Well, I can go on about that. I don't want to. It's, like I said, it's been an interest of mine. Sorry. Here's the thing about Karl Marx really quickly. Karl Marx published a book called The Communist Manifesto. And it is from him that guys like Vladimir Lenin and Joseph Stalin took his Communist Manifesto and applied it to Russia in the Russian Revolution. Mao Zedong took the Communist Manifesto and in the early 20th century applied it to China. And here is the thing. Communism on paper, and I think that's, in my opinion, one reason why a lot of our youth are really liking it today. Communism on paper sounds great. It sounds caring and loving for with people. But wherever communism has gone, whether it be in Cambodia or Vietnam or North Korea or China or Russia and the USSR and Romania, nothing more than death has been the result of it. Do you realize in the 20th century, communism accounts, and if you don't believe me, research this yourself, communism accounts for the deaths of more than over 100 million people. We oftentimes talk about how bad Hitler was and how, you know, World War II and Hitler is responsible for the killing of 6 million Jews and the total of 11 million people, and that's true. But do you realize Russia killed more people of their own countrymen and the surrounding countries than Hitler ever did? China, Mao Zedong, starved millions of people. Do you realize in the 90s with the North Korea, millions of people died in our lifetime under communist regimes? It is nothing more than the result of death. So let's talk about it really quickly. The first step to communism is becoming socialist. Now, some of these things we're going to define, I just want you to read them. Now, if you're a person that hates to read, this may get a little boring. Maybe you're already bored. I don't know. But I'm telling you, it will get interesting, though. Maybe. According to dictionary.com, socialist is a theory or system of social organization that advocates the vesting of the ownership and control of the means of production and distribution of capital, land, and the community as a whole. Really quickly, David Noble, I didn't bring the book with me, but he is one of the, when it comes to the worldviews, he, under the umbrella of Christianity, David Noble is one of the experts, in my opinion, who knows a lot of stuff. But Noble said, he said, socialism is the first phase of communism. In the transition to communism, the principle of socialism is from each according to his abilities to each according to his work. Under communism, the basic principle of society will be from each according to his abilities to each according to his needs. Socialism, he says, is the phase in history when the proletariat seizes both the means of production and the state. And the arrival, now listen to this, this is the goal of communism, which has never happened. The arrival of communism will occur when the government has withered away because classes have ceased to exist and no one owns the means of production. In other words, communism has a goal, and that is not just to create a classless society of everyone makes the same amount, you know what I mean, and everyone is basically equal no matter what, but the goal of communism is to get rid of government altogether. And here's the thing, that's never going to happen, And the ultimate goal of communism never has happened. Now, a lot of people disagree with me with this, but I want you to think about this. If that's what communism is and it's never happened, here's something that I want you to think about. Every country that has considered itself a communist country, you know what they've actually called? Well, I shouldn't say every. I haven't looked. You know what they've called themselves, though? Socialist. The Nazi Party. You know what Nazi literally stood for? People, it's funny, you can see the pictures on this, but you can read tons of articles today of people saying the Nazis were not socialists, they were capitalists. That's not true at all. The word Nazi or the Nazi Party was known as the National Socialist German Workers' Party. The USSR, do anybody know what the USSR stood for? Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. I want you to think about that, okay? I want you to think about that in light of communism has never reached its goal and it never will. And by the way, the Bible teaches that. On Wednesday nights here at Dewey Avenue, we are in the book of Romans. We're in Romans chapter 13 next Wednesday. And here's one of the things we find. Government is, the Bible says, is or in verse 2, is appointed by God, and government is ordained by God. And you know what that implies at the very least from Romans 13? God always implied that there would be an institution of a government that would govern people. God has created three institutions in the Bible. The first institution was the family. The second was the government. And then years later, you see in the book of Acts, the church, the kingdom of God. Those are three institutions that God has ordained. And there will never be a group of people living together that does not have some kind of set of governing rules. All right? There are different styles of government, but there is still a government, is the point. Anytime people live together, they've got to have a set of rules of how to live, how to get along. And so the whole goal of communism will never happen. It'll never happen. It really is one of the biggest, that and evolution, in my opinion, are one of the two most deceitful beliefs that people buy into today. Really quickly, when we think of communism, by the way, I tell you what's interesting is in the past, gospel preachers wrote about this. We don't talk about this much anymore. One of the books I have in my library was written by a preacher named James D. Bales. And this is a really good book. It's hard to find, though. And Bales, back in the 50s and 60s, wrote this. What's interesting is Herbert Philbrick wrote the foreword to this, and he was a guy who did a lot of undercover stuff and was kind of, and our country was one of the experts about communism in the 50s and stuff, and was one who exposed a lot of things. And he wrote the foreword recommending this book that Brother Bales wrote. And Brother Bales was a brilliant guy. Probably, as preachers, we don't agree with everything that Bales believed in it later on in his life. But Bales wrote a lot of books, and this is one of his great ones. But anyhow, here's something that he says about communism. He says this. He says, as a goal, communism refers to the ideal state of society, which according to Marxism, Karl Marx, will follow socialism. And it is claimed that in this society, there will be no coercive state, no classes, and no private ownership means of production and distribution. Men will work for the common good. Each will so live as to call for the best in others. Work and wages are concerned, and from each according to his ability and each according to his needs. In other words, whenever communist, socialist groups pushing communism come into power, all your private property is gone, that belongs to the state. All your means of production is gone, that belongs to the state. It's kind of one of those, some people say, what is the difference between socialism and communism? I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, not a whole lot. Not a whole lot. Here's one thing I will say. How was it explained? Socialism is if you have three cows, the government comes and takes two and leaves you one. Communism is if you have three cows, the government comes and takes all three away and gives you some milk, and if you complain, they'll shoot you in the head. Capitalism is the government lets you have all three cows, you sell one of the cows and buy a bull, you know, and you, in other words, profit from it. I know that sounds crazy. I have no problem saying that's a pretty fair depiction of each three economic systems, ultimately. Here's something else, though. When I think of the ethics of communism, here's something I want you to know. Someone once said, how do you know when a communist is lying? And I have no problem saying this, when their lips are moving. If you have a person who does not believe in God and they believe that communism is the best way of life, I promise you that you take everything they say with a grain of salt, because everything they say is going to be hard to believe. Because here's the deal, all right? Have you ever heard of the phrase, the ends justify the means as a rule of ethic? What does that mean? Anybody know what that means? Yeah, that's it. Okay, yeah. If you have to rob a bank for money for your cause, it was justified. You can do that. You know, the ends justify the means. And that is the ultimate ethic and moral value or moral standard of communism. It is the idea of whatever means possible to bring about a revolution. We see that with the Russian Revolution. We see that with the Chinese Revolution. Whatever means possible to bring about a revolution is what you do, and that's accepted. You know, you may feel bad for killing, you may feel bad for stealing, but if it was for the good of cause and for the long-term betterment of people, it's okay to do that. It's okay to lie, it's okay to cheat, it's okay to steal, it's okay to kill. That's why I say, if you seriously meet somebody who does not believe in God and believes in communism, they'll lie to you. They'll lie to you. And you're better off believing the historical patterns of communists than you are to believe their messages today. You get on the Communist USA website today and they will say things of, we're a peaceful group and things like that. The facts will speak for themselves, and that's one thing I will tell you. Just to give you a quick example of that, Leroy Brownlow is another gospel preacher. He wrote a book around the same time Brother Bales did, called The Bible Versus Communism. And Leroy Brownlow was a good gospel preacher too. He was a smart man. And this is a really good book too that I've read from Leroy Brownlow that I like. But one of the things that Brownlow said that I just wanted to share with you, he says, the communist talks much about freedom, peace, and goodwill, but their code of ethics permits an interpretation of these terms entirely different from ours. If he lies, he steals, and murders in the interest of communism, to him it is right. If he wars against private ownership, then he is actually engaged in a peace movement, so he believes. So I've got a lot of things that I want to do, but let's talk. We've got about 20 minutes left. Here's what I want to do. Whenever communism came into Russia, it was a violent revolution. The same thing in China. And the same thing in a lot of other countries. But here is something that I want you to understand. Communists in the early 1900s in America realized they were not going to succeed and making America a communist country by means of a violent revolution. They knew it wasn't going to work. And one of the leading communists in the early 1900s was an Italian birth communist named Antonio Gramsci. I may have mispronounced his last name. But Mr. Gramsci believed that the way you make America a communist country is you destroy it from the inside. You change its culture over time, and then communism will just naturally come to be. I shouldn't say naturally, but eventually it will. It is more of, there is communism by means of revolution, and there is communism by means of evolution. You understand that? Revolution is, let's get it done today, let's fight and kill. Evolution is, let's change the culture, and it evolves into that, basically. I have no problem telling you this. Communism has been behind the scenes in our country for a long time. I'm not saying you're a bad person. You may have had good intentions if you voted, for instance, for Barack Obama as president. But I'm going to tell you something. When you begin to look at the people who influenced his life, they all have been communist. His mother was a communist. The guy who wrote the book Dreams of My Father was not by him, but was by Bill Ayers, who was a communist. Okay? His spiritual advisor is a well-known communist. The church that he attended in Chicago was Jeremiah Wright, who is a liberation theologist, which is a form of communism. Everyone around him in his life have been communist. And I remember years ago when he was president, I would try to tell Christians, this guy has been influenced by Marxist all of his life. Why would you not think he's not a communist? Oh, that no way, no way, that would never happen. Once you begin to realize the belief of communists and the it's okay to lie and to deceive and everything, why is that not far-fetched? Let the actions speak for themselves and let the evidence speak for itself. You know, one of the things that influenced him one of the guys who really was connected to communism, a guy named Saul Alinsky, when he wrote a book, Rules for Radicals, dedicated it to Satan. One of the things you see under some of the communists is, you know, especially in Chicago, be a community organizer. What do you think he was before he got in political office? You know, don't sit here and think. I mean, we're going to get into this, but my point is it's alive and well. And it is places you do not realize. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Jerry was in the hospital, and I went up to see him. He wasn't very well. And a nurse came in, the television was playing. Jerry, at that time, didn't even have the ability to speak and communicate. Greg was there, and I think Loretta and several of them. But anyway, the reason I'm saying all that, there was a nurse that came in. I later found out she was about 24 years old, and I asked her. She came in, and she said, how's the election going?
Yes. And one of the things that's important about this is communism is more than just a political system. You know, if it was just exclusively what we would call communal living. But by the way, what you know, have you ever thought about this? What kind of economic system does the Bible endorse? Well, specifically, the Bible does not endorse any economic system. Okay? Some people, and we're going to talk about that in week 4, say the Bible endorses socialism. I think the principles from Scripture is more consistent with what we would call capitalism, but that's, we're not going to talk about that tonight. The big problem with communism is the idea it is rooted and grounded, as we see it today, in atheism. And anytime you see where communism is gone, people in the Christian faith have been either eliminated or severely persecuted or completely compromised. The idea of practicing pure, true Christianity in communist countries is slim to none. You just look at this. Look at North Korea right now, you know, a communist country. They catch you with a Bible, you either go to a labor camp the rest of your life or be shot that very day. You understand that? You see how people of the Christian faith are persecuted in China. We could go on. But it is rooted and grounded in godless atheism. Now, here's what I want to do in the next 15 minutes we have. By the way, this is kind of some things that... The real goal of communism is a one-world government, and ultimately that'll never happen unless they get a hold of America. Let me talk to you about something. Have you guys ever heard of the book The Naked Communist? All right. You can get these online. There was a guy who worked for the FBI in the 1950s called Dr. Cleon Skousen. And let me tell you a little bit about him. He worked for the FBI for 16 years. After working for the FBI, when he was in the FBI, though, he was exposed to a lot of government documents and government workers who were infiltrating communism, and he began to learn a lot of the secrets about communism and their tactics, their goals, their agendas. He talked to a lot of counter-unit guys. Anyhow, he gained a great deal of insight while he was with the FBI about communism in America, and he eventually, long story short, wrote a book about it that Ronald Reagan endorsed. J. Edgar Hoover was one who didn't necessarily endorse books, but hoped it would get a lot of praise and a lot of recognition. And he basically, in this book, The Naked Communist, wrote 45 goals that the communists had, okay? And this book was published in the late 50s and early 60s that the communists had for America. And what I want to do in the time we have, I want to share with you these 45 goals. Now, here's something that I want you to keep in mind, okay? You may agree with a few of these points, and that doesn't make you a communist. Here's the second point. Just because there are people today who are pushing for some of these points doesn't necessarily make them communist either, but implicitly you still are pushing a communist agenda. Okay? So let's talk about these real quickly. Some of these first ones are somewhat, I wouldn't call them outdated, but let's just talk about them real quickly. Number one, the United States should accept coexistence as the only alternative to atomic war. Number two, by the way, they get more interesting, I promise. United States should be willing to capitulate in preference to engaging in atomic war. Number three, develop the illusion that total disarmament by the United States would be a demonstration of moral strength. Let's get rid of our nuclear weapons. Let's get rid of our powerful weapons. Let's get rid of the Second Amendment. I'm going to give you an opinion. Are you ready for it? The one thing that keeps a communist revolution from occurring and not an evolution, I think, is because of the Second Amendment. You're welcome to disagree with that. But a country that is not armed is a country that is vulnerable. It is like a city in Bible times that had no walls. Think about that. Number four, permit free trade between all nations, regardless of communist affiliation, regardless of what or not some of these items. By the way, a lot of these have already occurred. Number four has happened, and it wasn't just, by the way, we would say Democrats that have been for that. It has been Republicans as well. And you'll find that with some other things. Number five, extend long-term loans to Russian Soviet satellites. Number six, provide American aid to all nations regardless of communist domination. Number seven, grant recognition of Red China and admission of Red China to the United Nations. That happened a long time ago. Number eight, set up East and West Germany as separate states in spite of that feller's promised in 1955 to settle the Germany question by free elections under supervision of the United Nations. Again, some of these are they've either already happened. Number nine, prolong the conferences to ban atomic tests because the United States has agreed to suspend tests along negotiated progress. All right, they get more interesting, okay? Promote the United Nations as the only hope for mankind. If its charter is rewritten, demand that it be set up as a one-world government with its own independent armed forces. How many of you know that the United Nations has their own military? How many people we see today that the answer to our society, answer to a lot of the problems in the world is the United Nations? Let's keep reading. Number 12, resist any attempt to outlaw the Communist Party. Number 13, do away with loyalty oaths. That's interesting. Number 14, continue giving Russia access to the U.S. Patent Office. Number 15, capture one of the both political parties in the United States. Here's what we're going to do. We're not even going to go there. Number 16, use technical decisions of the courts to weaken the basic American institution by claiming their activities violate civil rights. One of the books I have in my library that I find interesting is a book that was written back in the early 2000s called The ACLU versus America. And I'm going to tell you something. If you begin reading about the founder of the ACLU, Roger Baldwin, he was an open communist. And I'm going to tell you something. One historian estimates that the ACLU has participated in 80% of the U.S. Supreme Court's most controversial cases since 1925, from things such as defending pedophilia advocacy group, the North American Man-Boy Love Association, defending the free expression of numerous controversial organizations, the Nation of Islam, the National Socialist Party of America, defending terrorists. You know, one of the things that communists try to do is they try to operate under a system of government like the Constitution, and they'll try to use the Constitution against itself. Don't think for a moment when you begin to look at the ACLU that they are not an organization that is pushing and promoting communism. That's not to say that I know every person who works for the ACLU is a bad person or is a communist, but I will tell you the founder and many of their members are Marxist. And they've done a lot of damage. All right? I can go on about that. I'm not going to do it. Number 17, get control of the schools. Use them as transmission belts for socialism and current communist propaganda. Soften the curriculum. Get control of the teachers' associations. Put the party line in textbooks. I'm going to tell you this. I know a lot of good Christian teachers, okay? And I know they're not Marxist, all right? But do not think for a moment that it is not there. It is. I'll give you a few things about that. A recent American Enterprise Institute panel noted that in our universities today, there are more outward professing Marxists than there are conservatives in our universities. That's, hey, I'm a communist and I am not ashamed to admit it. They're more than, they outnumber the conservatives. I remember years ago that the new communist, to my knowledge, is the newest communist manifesto called Empire. It came out in the early 2000s. It was partly written by a professor from Duke University. You know, if you already hated them in basketball, now you have more reason to hate them more, I guess. But the sad truth is when you begin to look at a lot of universities, you're going to find a lot of professors are leftist, are socialist, and some of them will come out and say, "Yeah, I'm a Marxist." We got a few minutes. Here's the next one, number 19: use student riots to foment public protest against programs or organizations that are under communist attack. Number 20: infiltrate the press, get control of book review assignments, editorial writing, and policy making positions. Number 20: gain control of key positions in radio, TV, and motion pictures. I'll tell you something that I find a little interesting here. Hollywood is, Google, all of them are being influenced by China. And you will see some of the movies and what you cannot promote or push or be against. Do you remember there was a NBA owner of the Houston Rockets a month or two ago at the start of the NBA season who came out and was supportive of the protest in China. Well, the NBA has a huge money market with China. And when he came out about that, China's canceled some of the NBA contracts, which is the result of the loss of millions of dollars, and he got in big trouble for it. And I remember that was when LeBron James came out, my son's favorite basketball player, and attacked the owner of the Houston Rockets, saying he misspoke and he didn't know what he was talking about. He didn't know the issue. I think it's the other way around, if you want my opinion. But in some ways, there is the censorship of free speech from another country that is communist. I find that to be rather sad. And by the way, when you look at some of the... Let's just keep going. You'll see this. Notice 22, continue discrediting American culture by degrading all forms of artistic expression. American communist cell was told to eliminate all good sculpture from parks and buildings, substituting shapeless, awkward, and meaningless forms. There's a book I have, and it's written by a guy named Francis Schaeffer, and it's a book called How Should We Then Live? It's a very interesting book. I'll tell you what is the interesting thing about the book. He points this out. He says, you look at the art of a culture and you can determine the beliefs of the culture. So when you look at the medieval times and you look at the paintings of Jesus and Mary and, you know, a lot of the most beautiful paintings I think we've ever had was paintings of the medieval times. But whenever a country and the arts go towards atheism and meaninglessness, you see that in the arts. And that's one thing that he points out. I remember just a couple weeks ago, there was an art gallery, a piece that sold for $120,000. Do you guys remember that? You remember what it was? It was a piece of banana duct taped to a wall. And it sold for $120,000. You know what my thought was? Why didn't I think of that? Yeah, I know. But if you go and you look at art, I remember in Charleston, there was some Christian friends of ours that went to the one of the art museums in Charleston, and they said the main display at this art museum, you know what it was? It was about a 6.5 feet high baskets of stacked on top of each other of dirty clothes. I'm not kidding. And they showed me a picture of it. This was the center display of the art gallery in Charleston. I'm thinking if you wanted something like that, you could have come to my house, you know. But that's art today. It's gone. Let's keep going.
Hey, Dale.
Yes.
Since I've spent a couple of years in China, you know, it's interesting talking with a lot of the individuals I've worked with and some of their viewpoints, because a lot of them were part of the Communist Party.
Yeah.
Christian, Buddhist, etc., you have to denounce what your beliefs are. And, you know, you didn't have to be a member of the Communist Party, but if you wanted to have any ranking or success in the country, you had to be a member of the party. So a lot of times, you know, you could tell who was members of the Communist Party or not, but they would circulate, at least on a monthly basis, if not more often, basically homework for all of the party members. They would have to study and be propaganda essentially was coming from Beijing or elsewhere that they needed to know. And, you know, you're talking about television, we would watch their CCTV, which was the Communist Party's, state-run television organization, and, you know, talking about the protests in Hong Kong, I was over there when that was going on, and say, just like WTAP, if news would start at 6, they would show Hong Kong protesting about 6:25 and last for 30 seconds and then get to the next story. So they, you know, they would brush a lot of those issues under the rug, or the people in the country didn't know about it. And you look at, you know, around here where we have nursing homes, people that were sick or ill were pretty much just left to be on their own in the streets, or hopefully their family was taking care of them, but, you know, they pretty much have them doped up and just let them do whatever, you know, that they didn't care about them.
Wow.
And it's, talking about religion standpoint, they have departments with
and they believe it too. Yeah. I want to take 5 more minutes of your time, and I'm just going to share with you the rest of them. We're going to read the rest of them. I have a lot of comments under a lot of the rest of them, but we don't have time. I think some of these, do you see how some of these are what we would call somewhat self-explanatory? We see them. Well, let's keep reading real quickly. Look at number 24. Eliminate all laws governing obscenity by calling them censorship and violation of free speech and press. Let me just say this. New York Times once published an article about virtual child pornography. It was a ban that was overturned. In other words, it is legal in our country if you take the body of an adult that looks young and if you put a child's face on it, it's legal. That's legal child pornography. Scary. Really quickly. Number 25, break down cultural standards of morality by promoting pornography and obscenity in books, magazines, motion pictures, radio, and TV. You notice if you watch TV late at night or in the evenings, foul language is getting worse. How many of us have a thing on Netflix? Anybody subscribe to Netflix? You know what? There's a lot of Netflix-created series that look really interesting, really good. But when I see mature on it, I realize I don't know if as a Christian I can watch that. Yep. And it's all gone. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, think about that. Now, again, does that mean everyone in Netflix who's pushing nudity and foul language continually and other graphic stuff is communist? No. But it is pushing that agenda. Number 26, present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy. 27, infiltrate the churches, replace revealed religion with social religion. We're going to talk about that in week number 4, okay? Discredit the Bible and emphasize the need for intellectual maturity, which does not need a religious crutch. When I find people, clergy who promote homosexuality, they attack the Bible, that it is old, outdated, full of mistakes. And we know more about people now than what they did back in the Bible times. Number 28, eliminate prayer or any phase of religious expression in the schools on the grounds that it violates the principle of separation of church and state. Let me just say this real quickly. There's one of the books I have is written by a guy named William Murray, and it's called My Life Without God. You know who William Murray was? He was the son of Madeline Murray O'Hare. And very interesting read. And this lady was awful. She was a wicked woman. I can go into a lot about her. But she was the one responsible of getting prayer out of schools. You remember that? Some of you were around then, or maybe you were kids, right? He notes in the book, she was a staunch communist. She tried to go to Russia several times, and they wouldn't have her. It's sad, but she was a very bitter atheist, staunch communist. I remember one time she debated a gospel preacher named Gaston Cogdill down in Cincinnati years ago, and she got up in the audience and cussed and everything else and carried on, and she got mad and left and never paid her hotel bill. I mean, that's just kind of the person she was. She was a wicked woman, but she was a very, very big communist, and she pushed that. And don't think that her plea to get prayer out of school wasn't a part of such an agenda. Got to move on. 29, discredit the American Constitution by calling it inadequate, old-fashioned, out of step with modern needs, hindrances cooperation between nations and worldwide basis. Interesting. Number 30, discredit the American founding fathers, present them as selfish aristocrats who had no concern for the common man. 31, belittle all forms of American culture and discourage the teaching of American history on the ground that it was only a minor part of the big picture, give the more emphasis on Russian history and communists since the communists took over. Christopher Columbus is now a bad guy, right? Number 32, support any socialist movement to give centralized control over any part of the culture, education, social agencies, welfare programs, mental health clinics, etc. 33, eliminate all laws or procedures which interfere with the operation of the communist apparatus. 34, eliminate the House Committee of Un-American Activities. 35, discredit and eventually dismantle the FBI. 36, infiltrate and gain control of more unions. 37, infiltrate and gain control of more big businesses. 38, trained some of the powers of arrest from the police to police to social agencies, treat all behavioral problems of psychiatric disorders to which no one but psychiatrists can understand or treat. Listen, don't be surprised if the day comes where, as a country, our police force becomes federalized. Then you can indoctrinate the police force. And if you can indoctrinate the police force, the good guys we have right now will no longer promote the Second Amendment. 39, dominate the psychiatric profession and use mental health laws as a means of gaining coercive control over those who oppose communist goals. That's one thing about Russia. You oppose communism, you had a mental disorder. Discredit the family as an institution, encourage promiscuity and easy divorce, emphasize the need to raise children away from negative influence of parents, attribute prejudice, mental blocks, and retarding of children and suppressing influence of parents. Get the children away from their families, in other words. Create the impression that violence and insurrection are legitimate aspects of the American tradition. 43, overthrow all colonial governments before the native populations are ready for self-government. Internalize the Panama Canal. Number 45 has to do with the idea of repealing the Connolly Reservation so the U.S. cannot prevent the world court. In other words, as United States, no country can come in and kind of force their laws on us, whether it be the United Nations or wherever. That's basically what that has to do with. But I now see that this should have been like a four-part class. I'm sorry. I went about 7 minutes over. If you have any comments or questions after this, please come up to me. But I think, as you can see, the agenda is there. Let me say this in closing. There's a lot more material I had after this, but oh well. It's already here. And I want to tell you this. If you want to know a lot about this, there's a good documentary you can find on YouTube. And let me encourage you to watch it. You can eventually find it for free. It's called The Agenda, Grinding America Down. Look that up on YouTube. It covers a lot of this stuff, but it will blow your mind of the connections. It was made in about 2012. And it's good stuff, really good stuff as far as documentaries are concerned. Any comments or questions tonight? I really appreciate you guys being here. I know I may have put you to sleep somewhat, but I think you'll find some of this stuff a little bit interesting, if not somewhat scary. I think it is our biggest threat. All right. Thank you all for your time.